we're going to be having nightmares about Ayub Alkabi for years and years. Yep. And I've sort of investigated his career path, and this sums up the Europa Conference League in like the best way. Hello and welcome back to the Villa Filler podcast. I'm here, as always, with my good friend Dan Wiseman. Dan, better late than never, Olympiacos 2, Aston Villa 0, our Europa Conference League campaign has unfortunately come to an end. How are you doing, mate? The dust's obviously settled, hasn't it? But I think it's still a pretty open wound, isn't it?
It is, mate. It is. It's a funny kind of part to the season, really. I think we're at a really kind of weird point where I think everyone's kind of just ready for the end of the season, for the final whistle, for the curtain to fall, for us to kind of know our fate. I think that there's a lot of teams that it just feels that we're at that point in the season where there's just been so much football, so many games this year that it's not just the players that's taken a toll on. It's the band, the media. Like, you know, I watched the United Arsenal game today, and you look at like not only the names in the United team, but like the pace of that game and the kind of the standard of it generally. It was such a drop off from what we usually expect. And so I think across the league, there's so many teams right now that are just kind of limping towards the finish line. And a shame we couldn't get it done on Thursday night. But to be honest with you, I think once we saw kind of the first 10, 15 minutes, I think that was enough to kind of know that these boys are just the best, totally tired. And so, yeah, it's been a busy few days. As we said, we apologize for not coming to you guys sooner than you are obviously there in, I was going to say Athens, Perez, for the games. Made it there just in time, I believe. So you've done a hell of a lot of traveling. It's been a busy weekend for us both, which explains the late podcast. But this is where it's good. You know, we've got an extra 24 hours. Monday Night Football gives us, you know, another 24 hours of R&R. But yeah, for the two of us, at least, it's been a busy old weekend, mate.
Yeah, mate, it has. It absolutely has. The boys definitely need that rest. But it was a crazy journey, man. You know, when we were in Lille for the quarterfinal, and we were, you know, sort of praying as the results were coming in that it would be Olympiakos over, was it Besiktas that was in the other tie? Fenerbahce, that's the one. We were all hoping for the trip to Athens, Piraeus over a trip to Turkey, because that would have been an experience, to say the least. But yeah, so the next morning, we've, you know, the group of us that have been going away in Europe, there's about eight of us. We sort of looked at our flights, found the right times, right, bum bum book, and my old man, because we were looking at all sorts of different dates and stuff like that, we just got a bit confused and accidentally ended up booking the flights for the day of the game, and we booked them through some fucking dodgy travel company called eDreams that were just useless. I couldn't cancel, couldn't get a refund, couldn't change dates, couldn't change time, nothing. Literally, that's so unhelpful. So we were at this point where we were like, we're going to just have to firm it and not go, because it's not possible. We'd both obviously forgotten as well. So the flights we booked, by the way, just for context, had us arriving at like 10 to 6 or 7 around that time. So we were like, the game will literally kick off at 8 o'clock, so we're not going to make it. We'd forgotten about, obviously, there's a 2-hour time difference, so the game was actually locally kicking off at 10. So sort of made the last minute decision that it would be like possible to get there, very small time window. We'd all going well, no delays, we would land and we would have just over 3 hours from the moment wheels touch the ground to get through passport control, get in an Uber, get to the Panathinaikos Stadium, where the Olympic Auditorium, where the Villa coaches were, and take us to Piraeus. But of course, nothing goes smoothly, does it? We woke up on the morning, ready to head down to Gatwick Airport, and the hotel that we'd booked, apparently we booked that for the wrong day as well. So it was off to a great start. Thankfully, the payment didn't go through. So, you know, we're kind of a dub there. I think Dad's going to have to cancel his booking.com account, though, in case they try and charge him. Had to book a last-minute Airbnb. On the drive down to Gatwick, somebody nearly takes us out right by the airport, not looking as they're sort of crossing lanes. So there was that. And then naturally, you know, as always happens when you're going on a holiday or whatever, the flight was delayed by an hour. So we were very stressed and not sure that we were going to make it. AVFC support as well, by the way, need to put them on blast, because we inquired, I say we, a friend inquired for us while we were in the air about the coaches, and they were so useless. They were so intentionally vague, because the messaging from the club and from everyone throughout was, you have to get on these coaches. Piraeus is dangerous. Don't go to Piraeus on the match day. Do not stay in Piraeus at all, which is initially where we booked our first place, which we'd cancelled, and you know that was the whole other thing. So we're like, right, abiding by the laws of which, you know, Villa have stated, but we're paranoid now because we're going to be an hour late, and if these coaches that we have to get on aren't there, then we're not going to make it to the game, or you know, so we think. And AVFC support were just fucking useless. Like, honestly, they were like, our friend was like, you know, people are arriving late. They need to know when the last bus leaves. And they were like, the buses leave from 6 p.m. And it's like, okay, you've told us that three times. Like, how often will they be running? Will they be coming back? Are they going to, when do they stop running? The buses run from 6 p.m. Arrive at the Panathinaikos Stadium for 6 p.m. And he ended up like snapping at them and being like, are you like intentionally like being difficult with me here? Like, couldn't get a solid answer out of them. Thankfully managed to connect with the new Villa West Midlands police spotter, who sort of unofficially told us that an Uber in neutral colours, we will be fine. So it was like a bloody movie getting there, man, but we managed to get into the ground 20 minutes before kickoff. And then 10 minutes in, El Cabi, he kind of put to bed all the stress, all of the, you know, we were so worried about getting there. And the goal, honestly, the first goal goes in and I'm like, there's no point in even worrying now because we're out of this tie. It was just like that. I mean, I don't know how you felt, mate, but at that point it was a massive mountain to climb, wasn't it? 10 minutes in, 1-0 down. It just felt like it was never going to happen.
Yeah, I suppose at least the kind of day you had meant that you probably didn't have too much time to sit there and actually think about the game itself, I guess. Yes. Which may in some kind of twisted way been beneficial. But yeah, I mean, we knew realistically we would have had to get the clean sheet. I think, you know, if the goal coming so early on was kind of by the by, we'd have conceded at any point, really. I knew that we would have been out. I think I am a little bit disappointed that we didn't at least get the ball in the back of the net once, but I really don't want to read back to this and kind of dumb it all down to this, but nothing was going our way. Nothing was going away. But just every kind of shot that got deflected either ended up straight in the keeper's arms or just past the post, and every pass had an Olympiacos toe on the end of it, just took it away from an advancing player. Every ball forward was a yard behind the man making a run onto it. It was excruciating to watch, really. And the performance wasn't great, but we actually, the two ties combined, we lead on XG quite considerably over the 180 minutes, which shows that the openings were there. I do think that there was an element of we were just unlucky in this game. And you can kind of take that right away back to the first tie, in that, you know, there's the penalty on Douglas Luiz, both, and then the one, you know, he misses one later on in the game. There's the deflected shot, which goes in. There's, you know, a really narrow VAR decision for the first goal. Like, despite the kind of massive score lines, if you just changed a few margins over the course of the 180 minutes, there's a chance that they'll get through. But I think, you know, we have to give Olympiacos their flowers. The better team over the two legs has undoubtedly gone through, the side with more energy, with more verve, the side that, you know, we looked rocked on so many occasions, and not too many teams have done that to us, really. And I think the way that they approach those games, you've got to give Mandelbar huge amounts of credit. I mean, this Europa Conference League run has done absolute wonders for kind of his credit as something of a master now of knockout competitions, particularly on the continent. So, yeah, you really have to tip your hat to what they have going there and say that, you know, pound for pound, they've gone up with a side that, you know, with a squad that far outweighs theirs in terms of transfer values and everything like that. You know, there's big names littered throughout their squad and only a couple to pick from out of theirs and big names is a push, really. And so, yeah, they set up really, really well. They knew exactly what they had to do and they executed it perfectly. And as you say, to kind of get that goal so early on just really took the wind out of our sails. And you kind of felt that, yeah, from that point, we knew it really. I think to win it in 90 would have been difficult for Villa. I kind of had it as, well, you know what, if we can take it 2-0, get to extra time, and to be honest with you, get it done on penalties, you had to back Villa and more Emi Martinez in that situation. And so, yeah, it's disappointing, but I think everybody kind of knew after the first leg that it was such a mountain to climb, not because of the manner of our performance, but just how tired we looked.
Yeah, the better team won over the two legs. It has to be said. Olympiacos deserve all the credit. We're going to be having nightmares about Ayoub Alkabi for years and years. Yep. And I've sort of investigated his career path, and this sums up the Europa Conference League in like the best way, and just this game, right? So, Moroccan striker, you know, wouldn't hold a grudge against you guys if you hadn't heard of Alkabi before the Europa Conference League games against Olympiacos, even from the group stages, although he scored 10 and 8 in this competition since dropping down. Absolutely remarkable. Started his career in Casablanca in Morocco, Racing Club de Casablanca. He is a Casablancan born and bred. And then, you know, his career took him to RS Berkane, another club also in Morocco. After that, where does he go? China. HBFC.
As you do.
You go from Morocco to China. Enjoyed a loan spell to Wiad AC, I believe, are they in Morocco? They might well be. So we're sort of back over, you know, where he came from. Signs for them permanently. Then, you know, naturally as you do, you find yourself in Turkey. Hatayspor is there. He's not really scored. I mean, 26 goals in 53 appearances is pretty respectable, to be fair. And he's earned himself a move to Al Sadd. He's come from the Qatari League and signed for Olympiacos. I think it was in the summer. And he's been a revelation. 17 goals, 29 games for Olympiacos this season. Of course, this journeyman scores against Aston Villa in the Europa Conference League. And it's, you know, for the potential Olympiacos fans that are listening, nothing but love, nothing but respect. But if there were ever to be a time or a team for a journeyman striker to sort of make their name and then fade away into the shadows against, it's always going to be against Aston Villa. Does the name Wagner Love ring any bells, Dan? It's giving the same energy. It's giving CSKA Moscow tearing us apart in the old UEFA Cup.
Yeah.
I mean, again, got to give him the credit. Got to give him and Olympiacos the credit. It's all love. But we're never going to hear of this guy ever again. Never. He's going to fall off the face of the earth.
It is remarkable, mate. I believe now he's scored more goals this season than any other player in Olympiacos history. So, I mean, what a cap. And like, you know, putting the kind of Villa side to it, you know, out of my mind for a second, this is what the Conference League was created for, is to give a platform for these teams, a platform for these players. You know, we've given, you know, you could like Alkabi, this kind of probably the best moment in his career on a European competition to put, you know, and now Olympiacos have the opportunity and the way that they played, you know, you always have to back them to do it, to go and lick their first ever European trophy in their neighbor's backyard. I mean, it's amazing. And like, this is, it's a, you know, bit of my personal bias aside, it is a great narrative for him kind of to have this moment, 30 years old, find his peak, and he, you know, semi-final against a Premier League team, as I said, to put Olympiacos into a European final in Athens, like, it's amazing. It really is. And so it was utterly excruciating for the 180 minutes. And it was, you know, but you almost, like, now, as you say, the dust has settled. We're covering this on Sunday. There's a reason why I didn't feel compelled to do a solo pod after the game on Thursday. But yeah, I mean, this is what the Conference League is all about. This is what the conference, you know, it's, with all due respect, I think there is a worry that this club could perennially see Premier League sides in the latter stages of this competition, often winning it, to be honest with you. And that's not really what this is about. Like, no. Olympiacos, Fiorentina, you know, you look at the semi-final, Club Brugge, that there's those kind of teams are what this competition is truly for. And so, yeah, I mean, if you look at the previous winners, Roma, West Ham, I don't think that's who this has been created for. But I think if someone like Olympiacos goes and wins it this year, I think that is in the true spirit of the Conference League.
Absolutely, mate. Absolutely. And it was pointed out to me, obviously, Evangelos Marinakis owns Olympiacos, Nottingham Forest owner, you know, obviously massively been in the news in regards to financial fair play, and we know how many players they've signed. It was ridiculous. In the summer, Olympiacos signed 16 players. Six of them no longer play for the club. They've been loaned out, or they've been sort of tossed aside to the resis, don't play. They've signed another 8 players in January. So they've had a churn of around like 22, 23 players net, right? Familiar, Marinakis? Familiar? Like, it's straight out of his playbook. And
yeah,
I think although, you know, you can argue that the quality may not be as good and that, it's all sort of arbitrary because they've beaten us, of course, but we signed Morgan Rogers in January, and, I mean, did we sign anyone else? Can't even remember. No. I don't think so. You know, we obviously had a few players leave.
Apart from Costas, who won't arrive until the summer. It was pretty good. And Joe Gauci.
Joe Gauci, of course, yeah. So aside from that, we're like really thin just with injuries anyway at the moment. And, you know, it'd have been great if we could have signed a couple of players to help us. And obviously they dropped down from the Europa League as well. So that just goes to show you the level of opposition that there is in European competition. But yeah, I just thought it'd be important to point that out just for a bit of perspective in case there were still some people that were like pretty, we should have beaten these guys. But if I'm being honest, I don't think there is. I think the reaction on the whole has generally been pretty, I think people have understood that we're in a really tough place. And I think nothing epitomised the night more than Tim Iribunum. And I'm not digging him out at all, but, you know, warms up. Unai Emery could see, calm down, like, make sure you stay calm for a good 2 minutes on the sideline. He was just calming him down right before he came on. Comes on, first pass, straight out for a throw-in. That just sums the night up, doesn't it? That it perfectly epitomises how it went for us. All I can, you know, really say and think is that nights like this will make it even sweeter when we do go on and win a silverware or make a final or what, you know, whatever it may be. It's part of the process. And I think we are, you know, how many times have we said on the podcast, bro, we're way ahead of schedule. Like, this has been amazing. And I think, you know, if we are being frank, this probably was or is the best chance we will have had of winning silverware in God knows how long. But that isn't to say that we're not going to give it a bloody good go next season and in the following seasons, you know, whatever competition that may be, Carabao, FA, Champions League maybe. But it's a good experience to have, and it'll, again, as I said, it'll just make it that much sweeter when we hopefully go and lift the trophy one day.
That's the plan, mate. That's the plan. I think, you know, the one thing that I hope this has given us is, you know, regardless of whether we fall into the Europa League or Champions League next season, that there's no team really have we just barrel rolled, have we just rolled over, tossed aside, and had the complete, you know, Alkmaar away is probably the only time that we've really had it easy, and that was it. Yeah. That was it. You know, the both of the games against Zrinjski Mostar were a real slog. Ajax away was tough. You know, Ajax at home we did well, but we really need that first 90 to kind of figure them out. If nothing else, I hope that this run has really opened our eyes into, no one can be underestimated in the Champions League or the Europa League. All of these sides on the continent are really battle tested. They've got far better players than we give them credit for. They're very tactically adept and know exactly what they do to go and knock off some giants, basically. And so it is interesting in that whilst there is a part of it that goes, at least we should now never take a side for granted. We've seen how hard European competitions can be. There is a flip side to it to say that any team that we've played on this run, really, if you meet them in the Champions League, any team that we've played on the Conference League run, that is, has to be 3 points if you can take yourself seriously in that competition. And so that shows really the kind of step up that we'll be taking, whether that's in the Europa League or the Champions League next season. Any team that we've faced, really, if you really want to consider ourselves at a main stage, show that we deserve to be in that competition, has to be 3 points. And so a lot of learning, a lot of soul searching, but also I think, if we are going to show that we can compete at that level, we've definitely got to step our game up, because playing on the continent has not been easy for us.
No, it's not, mate. It's not. And, like, as I said, Lille and Olympiacos, I believe, both dropped from the Europa into the conference. So that's the next step. And obviously where we're at and where we're hoping to be come Sunday evening is the Champions League. And that kind of leads me on to a point that you've raised quite a lot recently, mate. Is it a bridge too far right now? I think the difficult thing for me is you can't level up without the revenue, and you only get that in the Champions League. But we are at severe risk right now, even with a full strength, fully fit squad, the likes of Emi Buendia, Boubacar Kamara, Tyrone Mings, whoever it may be that's injured, back, and obviously additions, as Newcastle were, of getting grouped. And the group stage of the new format of the Champions League is even longer, even more grueling. Group games end in January, which, what happens in January? FA Cup games. So fixture congestion will only get worse against superior opposition because, again, should we qualify, hot four, so you can guarantee we'll be going away to the Bernabeu, the Nou Camp, Sigmaringen Park, wherever it may be, which will be just the best experience. But when I say to you, how good does it sound going to the Bernabeu and losing 3-0 and Jude Bellingham, of all people, scoring a hat-trick and doing that right in front of the away fans, and hitting us with a cheeky keep right on in his caption at full time. It all of a sudden, the Champions League sounds like a fucking miserable experience, doesn't it?
Mate, you really do have to be careful what you wish for, because I'm sure we all sit here now and go, it doesn't matter. It's the fact that we're there and everything like that. But I think that would quickly grow tiresome, particularly over 7 or 8 group stage games. And so, we really do have to be careful what we wish for, really do. Because, one thing I dare say, I was kind of having a chat with some family and some friends over the weekend, and a really interesting point was raised in that we as a fan base really had to look at the man that will be in the opposite dugout on Monday night. And Jurgen Klopp has been labelled as a perennial, complainer and moaner about fixture congestion and everything like that. We have had a taste this season of perhaps just exactly what he's upset about. You can perhaps start to understand that given how grueling this campaign has been for Villa, if we were playing at 12:30 on Saturdays and stuff like that, then maybe over an extended period of time, that would grow a little bit tiresome. And so I think it's very easy to, when you're on the outside, be like, wouldn't it be amazing to be in Champions League playing all these teams, and then you get to see all these amazing players and clubs like come to your stadium, and vice versa, you get to go away. I think, very quickly, it can. And one thing that this fan base generally isn't very good at is taking a loss on the chin, looking over for what it is. Yeah. We are not the type of fan base to go, Barca could hit us for 7 or 8 tonight. It doesn't matter. It's just the fact that we're here. We don't really do that. We have a very big club mentality, and what it's worth, I think rightly so. But I think whilst we kind of look at it now, but wouldn't it be amazing to be in the Champions League, and God forbid this doesn't happen, we pulled someone like Bayern Munich, Real Madrid, Barcelona in the group stages, and they had the 5 each time. that's not going to be very funny. And so, yeah, I do think there's an argument whereby I think if you slowly build yourself up through the ranks, it can be better. And you're going to have to sacrifice at least one competition next season. Newcastle's season has definitely picked up since they got out of the Champions League, and that's no coincidence.
Yeah, you're right, mate. It's going to be tough. And, I mean, there's still two games left in the Premier League, obviously, which are going to be even tougher just to make sure that we can try and qualify. I honestly, and this isn't like me, guys, I'm not feeling very confident for these next two games. I think it's very plausible that we don't win another game before the end of the season. And I hate to be a negative Nancy. It's just how I feel, guys, if we're being brutally honest. I think the last win of the season that we're going to be able to have enjoyed will have been that win at home against Bournemouth. It's a Liverpool. It's Liverpool. And no matter what happens, they're still a phenomenal team, capable of doing anything on their day. And, you know, there are the issues with Salah and Klopp and Nunez and everything that's going on at the club right now. Something clearly isn't right at Liverpool Football Club, it's fair to say. Jurgen Klopp's not going to want to bow out with another two defeats, is he? You know, final away game, obviously a massive one for them. This is going to be really tough, mate.
It's a very interesting game. It's a very intriguing game. I think these kind of the last few games of the season, particularly the inside that have been in Europe, are kind of blown wide open. And as I said, the Brighton game, to be honest with you, whoever has the most legs on the day, whoever can field a lineup that's as close to their full strength team as possible, whoever gets luckiest with injuries, wins. I do genuinely believe that. I think I'm actually more confident of a result, be that a draw of this game, than I am Palace away on the final day of the season. I think Palace are one of, if not the only team right now that is taking positive steps at this stage of the season. It feels like generally, barring, okay, maybe the two sides going for the title, that almost everybody's level is slowly starting to drip off. And there are, you know, just Chelsea's and caveats to that rule, but generally, the standard of the league is falling off a cliff, and Palace have been kind of they've bucked that trend massively. And I think Liverpool have kind of suffered the same fate that we have in that regard, and that their form has petered off. But yeah, I mean, this isn't a fixture that we traditionally do very well in. Jurgen Klopp's final away day on paper couldn't come at a better stadium. They've won more Premier League games at Villa Park than they have at any other ground on the road. That is, we've won just one of our last 10 games against Liverpool. The last time we beat them was the 7-2 in lockdown, sorry. So yeah, I mean, it's not a side that we fare very well against. However, I do think that, you know, one final time at Villa Park, if you can get a point, it could genuinely be massive. But as I say, I do think that there's more for us in this game potentially than there is Palace away on the last day of the season.
Yeah, absolutely. And we need that point just to end Spurs' top four hopes, really. Obviously, we have a superior goal difference. So even if we did lose, you would imagine, unless we get hammered in both of our games and Spurs score an ungodly amount of goals against Manchester City and Sheffield United on the final day, which, of course, is possible. It looks like, you know, fourth could and should be ours. But Liverpool looked really good in this game against Spurs, didn't they, mate? You know, they kind of took their foot off the gas after their Harvey Elliott goal, you know, the fourth goal. Spurs came back into it a little bit, showed that they had a little bit of fight to give still. But this was Liverpool looking more like their usual self than anything else recently. Obviously, they struggled at West Ham, didn't they? They lost to Everton before that. Not too long again before that, they crashed out of the Europa League to Atalanta, who, wow, what a team. But it's, who knows how this one's going to go, mate? Who knows? I think the only thing I can say for certain is that Salah's going to score, because I've taken him out of FPL a couple of weeks ago, and it just seems like the game where he's going to get the business done. How do you see this one go? You've alluded to a draw, mate. I think we're looking really tired, aren't we? So if we can get a draw, that would be phenomenal. I don't think we're going to score many goals, though. So where do you think that leaves us, man?
But I think that's the problem, mate. That's the problem with Villa right now, is that I don't think we've got the legs to go and put three goals past the team. And at the other end, we look, you know, far more likely than we ever had at any point this season to go and concede three. And so you do the maths, right? It's tough to predict a win kind of in those circumstances. You have to just hope that there is kind of, it's, I feel that we're hoping for just one final push, but I think if it didn't come on Thursday night, then
yeah,
do you know what I'm trying to say? Like, I think that was the kind of, if we've got 190 where we just give it everything this season, I think Olympiacos away probably would have been that, and we just fizzled out. You know, it was just the kind of dying flame from minute one, and so it's difficult to predict this for the Villa. I think we'll be okay. It's impossible to talk about this game without the context of Spurs Man City, which happened 24 hours later, Tuesday at 8 o'clock. Spurs fans are like, they're singing chants, like, ahead of this game. Like, there is a real narrative that, like, Spurs fans genuinely would rather lose this game to help City on their push for the title than win it. I think, you know, I've seen a lot of, one thing I will say to all this, I've seen a lot of Villa fans sort of, you know, looking at it all doom and gloom, saying, yeah, Spurs are going to do it, I can see it, and all this sort of stuff. And I haven't seen from their last few games what everybody else seems to be saying to think Spurs are capable of putting that on. Like, yes, they beat Burnley, but they needed to do it. It took a goal from their centre-half in the 82nd minute to do it. Like, it wasn't, you know, if they just strolled out on that pitch, put four past them, get to clean sheet and relegated Burnley, I would have been like, okay, yeah, we need to be on watch. But, I mean, it wasn't an all-time performance. They did their lap of honour after the game. I think it says a lot about where Spurs are mentally. And so, look, I'm not ruling it out. I don't want to be clipped up at the end of the season. What I'm saying is, I haven't seen those signs yet from Spurs to say that, yeah, we really need to be worried here. And whilst City famously have a terrible record at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, and you know, that does need to be prefaced, it would have to take in it, you know, a Herculean effort from Spurs based on what we've seen recently to get 3 points there. And so, yeah, I think that's worth mentioning. As for the Villa, it's luck of the draw, mate, but it's going to be very difficult.
It is. I think City are on like 21-22 game unbeaten run in the Prem. Something crazy. We know City don't lose in this time of the season, so that's kind of all we've got to hope for, really, that City just turn up and do what City do at the back end of the season. But I wouldn't worry too much about it, to be perfectly honest, because although the revenue differences are significant, and, you know, I really want top four, do not get me wrong, there's just a part of me that thinks the Europa League is a somewhat easier transition back into, you know, hopefully regularly competing for European football, second consecutive season, of course, than the Champions League would be. But don't get my words twisted, guys. I absolutely want to see Aston Villa in the Champions League, and I think it's more important for the club off the field that we do so. But I think sort of on the field, the Europa League is probably a tastier proposition. With that being said, mate, I'm going to predict, I don't want to, but I'm going to predict a 2-1 Liverpool.
Yeah, I have to go with you on that, mate. I don't think I've ever called on this podcast and predicted a loss.
No.
And so, you know, it feels crazy to get sit on the pledge of the eve of Champions League football and predict a defeat. But yeah, maybe let's get a draw.
Let's do it.
One last push to get, you know, to completely flip everything I've said. Although Europa League might make more sense, we may never get a better opportunity to qualify for the Champions League. You imagine that one of the traditional top six, Newcastle as well included, will kind of butt their acts up and be in amongst this kind of push next season. So maybe we might make the most of us we can. So let's go. I will say a draw, mate. I'll say 2-2.
Positivity. Let's go. Get it done. The atmosphere at Villa Park will be insane if we sew that up. So guys, if you enjoyed this podcast, let us know by leaving a like, comment your thoughts below, and subscribe for more. Up the Villa.